This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind the decisions we make every day and how to make better ones. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman. Join me as I share true stories from Nobel laureates, athletes, authors, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better decisions in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen. This episode is brought to you by Choiceology, an original podcast from Charles Schwab. I'm Dr. Katie Milkman, a behavioral scientist and professor at the Wharton School and the author of the best-selling book, How to Change. You may have heard expressions like, time to get up and going, today's bad decisions aren't going to make themselves, or bad decisions make good stories. But really, no one wants to suffer the consequences of making a bad choice. Join me as I share true stories from sports heroes, Nobel laureates, and everyday people faced with monumental decisions. We'll discuss the latest research in behavioral science and dive into themes like whether we can learn to make smarter decisions and how powerful it can be to get a do-over. And we'll share useful tools and strategies to help you make better choices in your own life. You can find Choiceology at schwab.com/podcast or wherever you listen.
Usually I give quite a prelude, but I will keep it pretty short. And I just want to name that you wrote in about your struggles with communication, and here we are communicating.
Yeah.
Welcome to How To. I'm Courtney Martin. And as you just heard, today we're in for a conversation about, well, conversations. Pretty meta, I know.
I'm Shannon. I live in San Leandro, California. I wrote into the show because I guess I kind of freeze and just need to know how to speak in front of groups, that kind of thing.
To be clear, this isn't your average case of stage fright. Shannon actually doesn't mind speaking in front of a large group of people when she has time to prepare. Instead, this particular hang-up comes from talking to smaller groups of people.
I think this has been a struggle for me for a long time, but it didn't really like show itself until I was in grad school. It's a lot of just like open conversation, and I notice, well, I'm not particularly great at that. I like to like observe, take it in, and I'm not the person, you know, who like trying to be the center of attention or who just comes up with like these amazing, well-spoken, articulate sentences right off the dome. And yeah, so it stresses me out when I get into conversations kind of like this, and I kind of either like freeze and my mind just goes blank, or I just like do what I'm kind of doing now, which is like blabber, and I don't feel like it's like in a nice string or a nice train of thought.
So here's the thing. Shannon is feeling some pressure to improve how she communicates and engages with people in small groups because she's on her way to becoming an ordained minister. It won't be enough to deliver a prepared sermon and then just kind of disappear. She'll need to engage in a meaningful way with her future congregation.
Spirituality is a big thing, and people want to know that they can trust you, that you can lead them, that you're going to kind of give them the tools to go the right direction, you know.
So today, we're going to give Shannon the tools that will make talking to people easier. And in order to do that, I'm bringing in a voice that longtime listeners will definitely recognize.
My name is Charles Duhigg. I'm a former host of How To and the author of a number of books, including one that just came out recently named Super Communicators: How to Unlock the Secret Language of Connection.
Charles is going to share how a normal communicator transforms into a super communicator right after the break.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
The gift of gab is one of those skills that we think people are just born with. But according to Charles Duhigg, a lot of the smooth-talking types actually go through a period where they're pretty bad at basic connection. It's an awkward period that Charles himself remembers well.
I would go to summer camp or something like that, and I would see all the other kids kind of who just so effortlessly could make friends. I didn't understand how to do that. I always felt really awkward when I was trying to do that. And so I kind of had to study a little bit, how to have conversations with people, right? Like, I used to say hello to people, and someone pulled me aside in my middle school and said, no, don't say hello. Say, hey, how you doing? And I was like, oh, thank God, the code. It's not hello, it's hey. But that was kind of, I think, a thing throughout my youth, that I felt awkward at having meaningful conversations.
That's so interesting. So, Shannon, our first lesson is even us super communicator podcast hosts have also had seasons of not being very articulate or cool or whatever the case may be. I always say I write the book I need to read. Is that part of why you wrote this book, because you needed to read it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I basically had a couple of experiences that convinced me that I really needed to learn about communication. And one of them is that I got into this bad pattern with my wife, where I would come home and after a long day, and I'd start complaining about my day. And she very reasonably would offer some some practical advice. She'd say something like, why don't you take your boss out to lunch and get to know him better? And instead of being able to hear her, I would get even more upset. And I'd be like, why aren't you supporting me? You're supposed to be outraged on my behalf. And she would get upset because I was attacking her for giving me good advice. And as I looked across my life, I saw this happening again and again and again. They were unforced errors, situations where we should have been able to hear and connect with each other, but something was derailing us. And so that's why I wrote the book.
Wow. I can't relate to that at all. And Shannon, I know you're engaged to be married, and this may turn into a marriage counseling session too, but let's veer into Shannon's particular setting where she's professionally trying to figure out how to sort of establish trustworthiness. It sounds like, Shannon, it's important to you to be articulate in the sense that it helps people trust your leadership. Charles, as you were hearing her talk about sort of freezing up, or what she perceives of as blabbering on, although I certainly didn't experience it that way. What are you wondering about for her? What might be helpful?
Well, one of the things that I'm hearing, Shannon, and tell me if I'm getting this wrong, what happens is that at some point, something happens that disconnects what you want to say in your brain from what's happening with your mouth. And you feel like you're talking too much, or you're not talking enough, or it feels awkward, or something happens that maybe triggers a little bit of anxiety. Is that right? Am I hearing you correctly?
Sounds spot on. It's almost like my brain, stutters in a sense, and then I lose all track. And I try to recoup the thought, and then we're in Mars at that point. So
let's think back to when this happens. What are you feeling as you start speaking?
I think I feel obviously stress and anxiety, but also this need to probably be perfect or say the perfect thing, the right thing.
Yeah. And that's totally natural, right? Like, in our head, we hear this voice and it says things perfectly. And then we start listening to the words coming out of our mouth and they are so far from what we aspire to that it can make us feel even more anxious and make us feel even worse.
I just said to my fiance the other day, like preparing for this podcast and talking about it, like, you know, if I'm talking to you about, say, spirituality or something, I can go on for minutes and minutes because I know like there's no judgment. I don't have to be perfect. But like Courtney, maybe if I meet you for the first time and you ask me some big questions, it might be a train wreck. I don't know. You know, I'll try my best. But yes, that's definitely how I feel.
And the good news is there's definitely ways, there's techniques, there's tools you can use to make that a lot better. But before we jump into that, I want to ask you another question. If you were having a bad day and you wanted to call someone who, you know, just would make you, like having a conversation with them would just make you feel better, who would you call?
It's definitely my fiance, Florence.
What is Florence doing that makes you feel so good?
She's great at listening. She builds me up. She doesn't let me get stuck in these bad loops. And then lastly, she's a comedian, so she'll throw a joke or two in there. That usually helps.
Yeah. And if I was to ask Florence who she would call, would she probably say you?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so. What it sounds like to me is that it's just a matter of finding the tools so that every time you talk to someone, it feels like you're talking to Florence. Because the truth is, there are some people who are consistent super communicators. They're the person everyone loves to call. They're the person who can connect with anyone. And what we know about them is that it's not that they're more extroverted or more charismatic. They're not smarter. They're not funnier. They just think a little bit more about how communication works. Mm-hmm. And I think the fact that you have this with Florence means this is something you can do. Sometimes we just need a little bit of guidance to let those habits take over.
Well, and I wonder, Charles, if there's something about, there's almost a paradox here of finding the right tools. So actually, you know, to your point, thinking more about it, thinking more intentionally about it. But also I'm hearing like, is there a need for Shannon to think less about it in the sense that you can hear that, you know, as you open your mouth and you're starting to say something, you have this meta level in your brain that's saying, Shannon, that's not articulate enough. Shannon, you're talking too long. Shannon, you know, whatever that critical voice is. And so it's like we have to send that critical voice to like a beautiful Caribbean island and buy her a drink and tell her like you're off duty. I'm like a grown ass woman who's very smart and I can talk and maybe it won't be perfect, but people know that I'm a real legitimate leader in this space and like your services are no longer needed, right? Yeah. And then so there's a part of it that's like doing less, like thinking less.
You're
like,
exactly right.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, no, you are absolutely right. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to just kind of get a couple skills, remind ourselves of skills so that our instincts do take over. And it doesn't, and that, at that point, we're not even thinking about it. It just feels like talking. Mm. And it might be helpful to talk about what happens in our brain when we're in a conversation. So in this conversation between the three of us, as we've been talking, even though we're not aware of it, our pupils have probably started dilating at the same rate, even though we're separated by thousands of miles, and our breathing patterns are becoming more and more similar. This just happens automatically when you're in a conversation with someone else. You begin to physically match each other in terms of how your body works. But more importantly, if we could scan all three of our brains, what we would see is that our neural activity is becoming more and more similar. And within neurology, this is known as neural entrainment, and it's at the core of communication. If I describe to you something I'm feeling, an emotion, or I tell you about an idea, the reason why that's effective is because you experience that emotion yourself a little bit. You experience that idea. A lot of this research comes from a guy named Uri Hassan at Princeton and a woman named Thalia Wheatley at Dartmouth. The more and more we become entrained, the more and more we think alike, the better we hear each other. And one of the things that I'm hearing you say, Shannon, is when you go into a conversation, you think the goal is to be eloquent, or you think the goal is to not talk too long. But actually, the goal is just to understand what others are saying to you and speak in a way that allows them to understand you, whether that's eloquent or whether that isn't eloquent. And when you do that, when you become aligned, when you become neurally entrained, it doesn't matter what that conversation sounds like. The people in the conversation feel wonderful. That's when communication and connection really occurs.
When I walk away and I'm like, oh, that was actually good. It is, as you say, kind of just a natural connection, a free flowing. And I'm not like looking at myself from the outside, like, be perfect, yeah. Be perfect. I'm just existing. And I think that's part of my issue here is just like just being, you know, but that makes a lot of sense.
There's actually a lot of interesting studies looking at how well people recall what was said in conversations. And if it's a really great conversation, we are terrible at recalling specific sentences, right? Like, think about it. When you're in a great conversation, you walk away and you feel wonderful. But if I told you to write a transcript of that conversation, there's no way you could because you're in the conversation. You're part of it. You're not recording for yourself. You're just experiencing it. Now, what's interesting, though, is if you ask people to describe their emotions during that conversation, they can do it 100%.
Funny, that reminds me of the quote that's often attributed to Maya Angelou, that one that's like, people won't remember what you said, they'll remember how you made them feel.
Oh, yeah. It's a really beautiful way or perspective about it, because I am big on, you know, just connection and being connected to humans. And that's, thanks for framing it that way, really.
It also makes me think about, I kind of want us to like sever the association in our brains with that articulateness is trustworthy, because I think our lived experience is that sometimes someone can be incredibly articulate and it actually makes them feel suspect to us, because they're like so articulate that you're like, what are you trying to sell me? You know?
Absolutely.
So I think maybe that's something to tell that meta piece of you, Shannon, is like, hey, truth is, perfect sounding people are actually not particularly trustworthy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I've never thought of that, but I can think of very many people who fit into that category. So that's a good framing too.
So now we have the basics. We're going to be present in the moment, give ourselves grace to not be perfect, and aim for connection over perfection. When we come back, we're going to run through some ultra-practical tools that you can use to build a better conversation. Stay with us. Hey guys, before we get back to the episode, I wanted to thank you so much for all the feedback on our February friendship series. It was so much fun, wasn't it? So deep, so many insights. I've been thinking about it a lot. Here's what one listener had to say.
Hi, my name is Megan and I'm calling in from Raleigh, North Carolina. I just wanted to express my deep gratitude for your friendship series. As a 27-year-old who just went through a big move, I got married, and I graduated with my PhD. I have had all these really positive life things happening, but had two of the most traumatic friend breakups that I'd ever experienced in my life so far. And so I just really appreciated listening to your show and the speakers that came on to talk about, you know, the dynamics of friendships. I especially loved the intergenerational friendship episode. That really resonated with me as somebody who has a lot of elderly friends. So thank you for all you do. Take care. Bye.
Carvel and I love to hear from you. Send us a message at any time at howto@slate.com or call us at 646-495-4001. We're back with our listener, Shannon, and Charles Duhigg, our former How-To host and author of the new book, Super Communicators. Now we're going to move into a few pieces of advice to help make communication less stressful.
The first one is actually pretty interesting. It comes from a study that was done by Harvard Business School professors. And what they did is they had a bunch of students and they told them, you're about to have a conversation with a stranger, which is one of the most anxiety-producing things that we can tell someone to do. And they said, look, but before you start this conversation, what we want you to do, just take 10 seconds to do this. Pull out a piece of paper, write down three things you might want to talk about. Like, you know, last night's game and what are you doing this weekend and what's your favorite book? And so everyone pulled out a piece of paper, they scribbled this down, and then they usually just put the paper in their pocket or they threw it away, something. And then they said, okay, now let's go have the conversations with the strangers. And they divvied everyone up. And what they found is that the topics that were written down almost never came up. But afterwards, when they asked participants how they felt about the conversations, they said things like, oh my gosh, I was so much less anxious than I usually am. Or I was able to listen so much better instead of thinking about what I wanted to say next. Because I knew that I had these three topics in my pocket that I could fall back on. And I never needed to, but just knowing that they were there, they made me feel better. Do you think, would that help you?
Definitely in one-to-one dynamics. I think a lot of my stress or blanking out will oftentimes come in like these bigger group settings.
Yeah.
Which I think I could find a way to do this as well.
Well, and I'm glad you raised groups, right? Because oftentimes it does get harder with a group. That's when we can feel that pressure to be perfect. And there's actually a technique that helps us alleviate that as well. And it comes from research that's been done on people having hard conversations, particularly about race. And what they did is they asked people at the beginning of a conversation to say something like this. I want to acknowledge this conversation is going to be potentially kind of a little bit awkward. And I am definitely going to say things the wrong way. Like I'm going to say things in ways that don't really explain what I'm trying to say or that maybe sound wrong to you. And I'm going to ask you to forgive me in advance. And if you say something wrong, I promise you, I will bring my like best good faith to this. I won't judge you for it. I'll ask you to explain. Mm-hmm. And when they did this, and they also asked folks to think about obstacles that might emerge and how they would react to those obstacles, they found that the conversations were almost transformed. And I think it gets to that thing that you mentioned before, the pressure to be perfect, the pressure to say the right thing, which when we're in a group is even more acute. Oftentimes, we can't be perfect.
I hear you saying like, just a level of transparency and authenticity can go a long way here.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, yeah. Shannon, where you trace that perfectionism from? Like, where do you think that meta voice was born?
Yeah, my best guess is my childhood. It was pretty, I guess, trauma filled and fear inducing in many ways. And I think there's just a level of like, either I blend into the wall and I'm silent and I'm hyper observing everything around me, or when I do get the chance to speak and to be noticed, you know, I try to get it all out, or that's where I think the roots of this might lie.
And I guess I ask Charles because I think I love your recommendation. Like, I think naming the fear is both potentially good for Shannon to feel more comfortable because she's already put it out there, and it's beautiful modeling for other people. But I also do think naming the fear is harder for some of us than for others of us, right?
Absolutely.
Like if you were raised in a family where it was okay to make mistakes and you felt a real sense of unconditional love, which I was lucky enough to, like, I can feel pretty comfortable flubbing it up on a podcast. Like, I had the privilege of that. But I feel like if you grew up in a family where at a very formative moment you were taught you could get in trouble for what you said, it's a lot harder to say to a group like, hey, I might screw up, love me anyway, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's exactly right. And part of this, I think, is having conversations with ourselves. and bringing that same kind of patience and forgiveness to ourselves when we have those conversations to say, like, where does this come from? What happened when I was young that might make this hard for me? And forgiving ourselves for not being able to do it right now, but knowing that we can get better at it.
I think it's it definitely feels freeing in some ways to know, like, this is something I can chop away at or learn to be better at.
Yeah, as do so many people. That's why I'm so grateful to you for bringing this to us, Shannon, because I think so many people will relate to this conversation. I wanted to introduce another frame that I thought might be useful to you. And Charles, I'm curious if you ran across this in your work, intellectual humility, which is this fairly new academic field where people are studying, like, who are the kinds of intellectuals that are able to essentially right-size themselves in different rooms about, like, how much space they take up. And what I find so compelling about this is when you first hear it, you think, like, oh, so you have to get the arrogant guy who's going on and on and on to understand, like, hey, maybe I should take up a little less space, right? Which could be a real service in some rooms. But also, we need people like you, Shannon, who have a lot to offer and sometimes tend to take up too little space because of childhood conditioning or because of imposter syndrome or, you know, so many reasons, to take up more space, to really recognize, like, okay, there are some rooms where, Shannon, you might not know a lot and you might not have that much to offer, and that's fine. You get to sit back and listen and learn, and that's great. And then there might be rooms where you actually do have a lot of theological knowledge to offer or pastoral knowledge to offer. And, like, that's a time to say to yourself, all right, Shannon, like, this is one of those take up a little more space moments.
It feels scary. But I respect it. It feels scary. If I'm being honest, but I think growth probably it's scary, right? So, I mean, I might just need to challenge myself a bit more.
Another thing that can help a humble person like Shannon feel less nervous speaking is to actually focus not on herself and her own ideas, but on what she's hearing.
So one of the interesting things that we've learned is that listening is really, really important, but oftentimes we don't understand when other people are listening. And in fact, we're suspicious that they aren't. So one of the things that we've looked at in the book, there's a chapter about this experiment that was done where they brought in gun control advocates and gun rights folks, people who normally, like, hated each other and would scream at each other. And before they had a conversation, they said, okay, look, what's really important is when you are talking, you are going to suspect that the other person is not listening, that they're just waiting their turn to speak. So we need you guys to prove to each other that you're hearing one another. And the way that we're going to do that is this thing called looping for understanding that actually Amanda Ripley, who used to be a host of the show and I know is friends with Courtney, she's the one who introduced me to this idea, and it's so powerful. And looping for understanding has these three components. The first step is you ask a question. The second step is once the person has answered the question, you kind of repeat what they just said in your own words. You prove to them that you heard them, that you're processing this. And then step number three, and this is the one that we always forget, is you ask if you got it right. My guess is, so let me ask, when you're talking to Florence, she probably doesn't do it quite formally like that, right? But how do you know that she's listening to you?
Usually it will be because of the questions that she asks off of whatever I say, or, like, later, maybe a follow-up, you know, if I'm like, oh, I have a headache, you know, later, like, how's your head doing? Or something, you know, simple like that. Yeah.
You're exactly right that oftentimes when we do this looping for understanding, we don't just say what we heard the other person say. We ask a follow-up question. That's kind of a form of looping in and of itself and saying like, what I hear you saying is this, like, what did you do next? How did you think about it? And embedded in that is, did I get it right? We don't even have to say, am I getting this right? Because we're asking a question to try and figure out if we did get it right. And how do you feel when Florence says that, when she asks those follow-up questions? How do you feel?
Definitely just feel seen, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. our brain has evolved to love that feeling. Like that feeling you get after a really good conversation when you feel like you've really been heard and then you also heard what they had to say. And sometimes it's just as simple as asking a follow-up question or as simple as saying, look, what I heard you say is this. Tell me if I'm getting this right. If you did that, particularly in these groups where it's a group conversation, do you think that would help?
Yeah, I do. I think it puts less of the impetus on me to like formulate some newer big thought, and it puts me more as like a conversational partner with them, seeing them and then asking the follow-up question to make sure I really get it.
Also, Charles, don't you think that's such a huge contribution? If that does feel like a natural role for you, Shannon, and you said you like to listen and kind of take it all in, it's like if there's someone in a room who's not just listening to figure out when they can talk, you know, which is what like 90% of everybody is doing. And there's one person, which could be you, who says, hey, just to help everyone sort of integrate this, here are the 5 patterns I heard from the things people said. And that could even be something you were writing down during the conversation. So it actually is a form of preparation for you. And then you could read like just clauses on a sticky note that you're writing as you're listening to everyone. I think kind of being a listener in residence in the way that Charles is framing it could be a huge service to any room.
Yeah. You're, I think, doing as much of a service for people by listening to them and repeating back what they've said, helping them hear themselves, showing that you care. That often I find in conversations I have, that's more powerful than someone having the exact right idea or some really, really well put, you know, counter argument. Like what I really want is I want to understand myself and this other person. And when they help me do that, even if it means that they aren't having a genius insight, I appreciate it so much.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's like, so I feel like it's a role made for me. I just feel, you know, I feel like as humans, we're kind of, we're like trained to do things a certain way. And I wish like there was more appreciation for the people who are more of the observers or the ones who like take it in, and maybe I just have to make that in the spaces that I'm in and do what you all say and kind of be like the string that can tie the conversation together or something of that nature, you know?
And it's a way to take that trauma that you referenced, which has made you vigilant, you know, a vigilant listener, and actually transform that into a superpower. Right. It's like, I mean, I don't want you to have to feel vigilant from a self-confidence perspective, but I love the idea that that little girl who was kind of watching everything and trying to stay safe now can be that grown woman who's listening to everyone and really threading people together.
I love that so much.
Oh, I love that. That is such a nice way of putting it, Courtney. And it's interesting that you mentioned that threading together. So there was another experiment that was done by a guy named Bo Sivers at Dartmouth, where he looked at groups of strangers who came together and had to complete these tasks together. And some of these groups bonded really, really quickly. And he found that there was one person, at least one person in each of these groups that bonded really quickly and did the assignment really well, that in retrospect was a super communicator, right? They were really good at this. And what's interesting is they were not the smartest person or the most eloquent person in the group. What they did do though, is they helped take the threads. They would repeat what other people said. They would say, hey, Jim, your idea was just like that idea that Susie mentioned. Like, I think there's a way to combine these two things. By being the thread between everyone else, they brought that group together. And what's interesting is that afterwards, when everyone was asked, like, who is the most influential person in your group? Who did you like the most? Who would you love to have another conversation with? Who just like seemed to make the conversation better? Those people who did that threading, that listening, that making listening obvious, they were the ones everyone else chose. And it's not because they spoke the most. It's not because they said the smartest things. It's because they helped everyone else feel heard. And I think you're in a wonderful position to do that.
Thank you, Charles.
Turns out, the secret to being a great talker is being a great listener. We spend so much of our time on this dang earth worrying about sounding articulate, saying something novel, making people laugh with an ingenious joke. And really, this whole time, all anyone wants from us is to be heard. So, that's my challenge to you, how-to listeners. Pick one conversation today and prime yourself to listen really, really well. And forget about being charming. Let us know what happens. Send us a note at howto@slate.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-495-4001. Thank you so much to Shannon for coming to us with a fear of group conversations to, well, have a group conversation. Shannon, you did so well. I really appreciate you opening up to us. And thank you to Charles Duhigg for sharing your wisdom. We'll include a link to his book, Super Communicators, in the show notes. And if you like what you heard today, please give us a rating and a review and tell a friend. That helps us help more people. How To is produced by Rosemary Belson with Kevin Bendis. Joel Meyer is senior editor and Derek John is executive producer. Merritt Jacob is senior technical director and composed our theme music. Charles Duhigg, yes, that one, created the show. Carvel Wallace is my co-host. I'm Courtney Martin. Thanks so much for listening.